is on release. Now it's through this world I ramble. I see lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun, some with a fountain pen. But it's through your life.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David K. Johnston, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. His most recent books, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, were New York Times bestsellers. He was a reporter for the New York Times for 13 years and now teaches at Syracuse University's College of Law and the Whitman School of Management, and was recently elected board president of Investigative Reporters and Editors Incorporated. His latest book just out is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. Welcome to Background Briefing, David K. Johnston.
Well, Ian, thanks for having me.
And I'm very grateful for your book, because I've been railing a lot lately in interviews about broadband. You know, here we are in the United States. We invented the internet, and we're slipping further and further behind the rest of the world in internet speed. We're down to 29th in the world, you know, beside Bulgaria. And at the same time, we pay more and more for our internet, cable, and TV. And just by contrast, the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, laid fiber optic cables and have everybody in Chattanooga gets a public utility of the best broadband in the world. And I'm so glad that you've come up with a book that, among many other examples, shows how corporate America is just reaming consumers and citizens.
Well, indeed, one of the things that's happened, because the news media hasn't been paying any attention to the regulatory agencies, whereas corporate America has huge staffs that work these agencies thoroughly, and they've succeeded in a number of states in radically cutting the staff that was there to represent the public, to act on behalf of the public. They have developed rules now that have created this terrible situation where our economy is being held back. One of the reasons we have such serious problems with jobs is that our internet is, well, we're 10 or 15 countries below Moldavia in our internet, and large parts of America will never get, under current law, the kind of internet that exists everywhere in France, everywhere in South Korea, everywhere in a number of countries. And we need to recognize that just as in the early 19th century, canals and railroads were the key to economic growth, that having a really fast internet, something blindingly faster than what you see advertised on TV, and by that I mean 20 to 100 times faster, is what's crucial to having a robust economy with lots of jobs in the 21st century.
So your new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. Let me just quote some of the statistics about what we're talking about. Telephone companies collect $360 billion in rate increases over the last two decades, and we've slipped from being number one in internet speed down to 29th in the world. Americans pay four times as much as the French for an internet triple play package. That's phone, cable, TV, and internet. At $38 per month versus $160 per month that we pay here to these essentially monopolies, either Time Warner or Comcast. The French get global free calling, worldwide live television, and their internet is 10 times faster than ours. And by one measure, Americans pay 38 times as much as the Japanese for internet service. So again, I guess it's like healthcare. The average American doesn't know how much better off the rest of the world is.
Well, yes. And, you know, that's one of the things that's very troubling. We have all these politicians who run around and say, America is the greatest. And everybody's supposed to say, America is the greatest. Well, you know, like Will McAvoy, the fictional character in HBO's Newsroom, I'm going to say, it's not true. And until we recognize that it's not true and that we're not getting the rules right, we are going to be worse and worse off. And it's really, these are really core issues. I go through how all of the utilities, electric, natural gas, oil for pipelines, water, telephone, internet, cable, all of them are being used to charge super high prices for unbelievably bad service that the rest of the world has figured out ways to regulate these things, or they run them as public services, that is, they're either nonprofit or government-owned. And in America, those places where we have nonprofit or government-owned utilities have the best services at the lowest price. And we need to fundamentally recognize what we're doing here. And here's how determined these companies are. One of the chapters in my book is about a man named Joe Sieber, who for 30 years has made his living proving that electric utilities cheat businesses and government by charging them too much money, charging them for services they didn't provide, a whole host of things, by auditing their electric bills. Well, he's particularly gone after Entergy, E-N-T-E-R-G-Y, which is the big utility that serves Louisiana, parts of Arkansas, Mississippi, and East Texas. They used a legal ruse to try and jail him. And I tell about how this judge was all set to jail him for 45 days over a letter he wrote that honestly related the dishonest practices of the company, only because I was in the courtroom and the judge asked who the one stranger was sitting in the courtroom, did things not go quite so badly for this man? But the company's lawyer said to me, well, you know, how do we stop this guy? I mean, he's causing us terrible problems. And I looked at him and I said, well, it's really easy to stop him. It could be done in an instant. And the lawyer looks at me, you know, and says, how? And I said, stop cheating your customers.
Well, what a concept, David K. Johnston. Again, I'm speaking with David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who's been called the de facto Chief Tax Enforcement Officer of the United States, the author of the bestsellers Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, and his latest book just out is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. No other company, to my mind, is a greater exemplar of the fraud of corporate America than AT&T. I had to get rid of them because I couldn't even get phone service at my own home on my cell phone. And once I called 611 to complain, and I lost the call twice while I was talking to them. And then I found out they were charging me three or four times more than Verizon, who've actually laid down some fiber optics. The whole world and most of America is already wired with fiber optics, but these monopolies control the last mile. And they don't want to invest a dime. I mean, look at AT&T. They spend all their money on lobbying in Washington and on advertising on television, telling you what a great corporation they are.
Well, in California, there are 120 members of the legislature, right? 80 assembly members and 40 senators. And there are 120 AT&T lobbyists in Sacramento. I mean, that's astonishing. They have one lobbyist for every single member of the legislature. Now, five states. Let's see if I can remember them all. Wisconsin, North Carolina, Alabama, Texas, and Florida have repealed your legal right to have a landline telephone. Every American has had a right to a telephone at their address. You have to have an address. You live in the middle of a forest, they don't have to give you a telephone. But if you have a street address, by law, since 1913, you've been entitled to a telephone. When these five states repealed these laws, do you know not a single word of it appeared in any newspaper or any TV? Now, of course, if you want to know, you know, who are the Kardashian sisters kissing this week, you can find out. But something important like this, no coverage whatsoever. And they are trying to get these laws repealed everywhere. And they are putting other laws and rules in place where literally you could have telephone lines, cable line, maybe even if you're lucky, fiber optic running down your street, and they can refuse you service.
Well, but this is a form of corporate socialism, isn't it? The corporations buy the politicians, control the regulators, get the rules written their way, and the last people they care about, apparently, are the customers. They don't care about good service. They would rather advertise and tell you how great they are than actually deliver. I mean, you told the story. You said to the lawyers down there, the best way to stop harassing this guy is to actually do what you're supposed to do, which is deliver a service. What's happened to American capitalism? Are they just so fat and lazy, and the government is completely sold out that they can just have it their way? Is that the situation?
Yeah, Citizens United illustrates this problem perfectly. The Supreme Court gave political rights to corporations and any other entity, unions to the extent that big labor now exists. I think of it as little labor, and other organizations to involve themselves in political campaigns. The people who wrote this decision, or most of those who were on the decision, call themselves originalists. They claim they interpret the Constitution the way the founders would have. You know how many corporations existed in the United States when the Constitution was adopted? 20. There are 6 million of them today. And 14,000 of those 6 million own almost 90% of the assets. And these big companies, through their campaign contributions, which they can now do directly through the companies, they don't have to go around and strong-arm executives for money, through their ability to throw their weight around about jobs and other activities, are working very hard to rewrite ancient rules of business and to replace competitive markets, because there's nothing businessmen hate more than competition. Competition is terrible for profits, but it's good for the economy. That's what Adam Smith's Invisible Hand is about, that competition leads to more efficiency and greater wealth. Corporate socialism leads to a sclerotic society where a few fat cats do very, very well. And unfortunately, the news media has shrunken so much, because after all, newspapers, which do almost all the serious reporting, are, as an economic model, they're in the business of connecting buyers and sellers. You know, you're looking for a job, somebody's trying to find somebody to hire. You want to buy a used car, here's people with used cars. And as they have shrunken, and their news staffs have shrunken, and in addition, those news organizations that have done tough work have come under unbelievable attack, organized attack. And the individual reporters who do good work come under attack. Trust me, I spent years being one of those people who was under that kind of attack. Then they've stopped covering these things and stopped reporting on them in a serious way. I mean, in Los Angeles, for example, you have one journalist, David Lazarus, who's a columnist for the LA Times, and to some extent Mike Hiltzik, who does a little more political work. That's about it when it comes to really seriously examining what's going on, and they are totally unmatched. I mean, just one company, AT&T, 120 lobbyists in Sacramento. So the public isn't hearing about all these little changes. And by the way, the companies aren't stupid. They don't go in and say, we want a wholesale change in the law here. They get a little change in 1990, and then they come back in 93, and they get another regulation changed you've never heard of. And then a few years later, they get a statute passed. And they put together this thing over a period of time until they have what they want, and nobody notices.
Well, you know, the next outrage by the Supreme Court will be Dodd-Frank, the corporate lobbyists who have been trying to water that down through their ownership of most of the people in Congress. They're working overtime, but they're pushing their case now to the Supreme Court, which is going to take it up. And they're likely to, the corporatists on the court, including Roberts, are likely to rule in favor of Wall Street and overturn what little teeth Dodd-Frank have left. So there's no question that they're working around the clock, and there is so little advocacy left in America for consumers and citizens. It's really shocking. And as we pointed out, just in terms of customers, the rest of the world gets infinitely better service than we get from most of our basic needs, particularly in the internet age. I wanted to ask you before we close, though, about Mitt Romney's taxes, given that we've billed you as you've been described as the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States, David K. Johnston. I saw you on MSNBC a couple of nights ago with an accountant who deals with wealthy offshore people who park their money like Mitt Romney. And you were saying, and I've heard this before, that the key tax returns for Romney are the 2009 tax returns, which may show that he took the IRS amnesty as a result of the investigation into the Swiss bank and the enormous numbers of American customers they had. And the IRS apparently has been getting quite a windfall from these people who've come in from the cold. Now, we know that the return that he just released, the 2011, is fairly bogus in as much as he could have taken bigger deductions, but he decided not to, so that his taxes would at least be as high as 14%, which is, of course, ridiculously low to begin with. The guy that you were on with said that you wouldn't know about whether or not he took the amnesty because the FBAR form is a separate entity from the...
Let me deal with this. Romney, I've been calling on Romney for almost a year to release his return since 84. He gave his 1984 through 2007 returns to John McCain's campaign staff when he was being considered for vice president 4 years ago, and he required Paul Ryan to give him 10 years of returns. And, of course, his father released the abstracts of 12 years of his own returns. The 2009 return on its own would not tell you whether he got amnesty, but it would have enough hints in it that you'd be able to figure it out. The guy who was on the show is right. Technically, you want that form, and it could have been filed separately and probably was to the tax return. But the larger issue here is that Romney, it's not venality is not the issue here. Romney may have gotten amnesty, and that would be venality on his part, which he has then corrected. The real issue is that the tax code treats working people entirely differently than people like Mitt Romney. You and I and everybody listening to this show has their taxes taken out of their paycheck or their pension check before they get the money. The government knows exactly how much money you made because your employer reports it. It knows how much you took as a mortgage interest deduction or entitled to because your bank reports it. But if you're a guy like Mitt Romney with all this offshore money, the government relies on you to tell the truth. And even if you're audited, these are such big, complicated structures that you can hide all sorts of things. And you are allowed to engage in practices around the world. In Italy, there's a big scandal over how Romney made what appears to be $60 million while paying no taxes in a business deal because he did it through an entity located in Luxembourg. And they essentially bought a company, resold it for 28 times what they paid for it, and then it fell in value back to what it used to be worth beforehand. So there really was no increase in value, and they did this almost assuredly with borrowed money. So their real return was on the order of $250 to one in a couple of years. That's the kind of thing that needs to be focused on, and how people who get these deals pay little or no tax. And Romney has done more to put a spotlight on the unfair nature of our tax system, how it is not progressive, how it violates this ancient principle of progressivity that goes back to ancient Athens, and how one of the reasons we're in so much trouble in this country is that we are getting fundamental rules wrong. Romney has been great for that, and I hope that we hear more and more about Romney's taxes, and don't be shocked if somebody turns up with Romney's returns before Election Day.
Well, just in closing, David K. Johnston, what's great about your book is that you've got the last chapter, you've got solutions, and they're quite comprehensive, solutions to how citizens can empower themselves. Just in the last minute, can you run us through what you've written in here as a way not to leave us wallowing despair about how we're all getting screwed, but what we can actually do about it?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand you won't find in searching for Google what's in this book. This is all original reporting on stuff that nobody else has ever reported on. In the solutions, I explain things. There are basic, simple reforms that we can do to address these problems. And two simple ones involve utilities. Every dollar that a utility company spends on seeking rate increases, and all the utilities rates around the country overall have been going up much faster than the rate of inflation, should be matched dollar for dollar with the money for the customers to challenge the rate increase, divided between industrial and commercial and residential customers for electric utilities and water utilities. That would give not a level playing field, but something closer to it, so we wouldn't have one-sided rate making. The government should go back to collecting all sorts of data that they've stopped collecting, because you can't make regulatory decisions if you don't have information. And the companies already have all this information. They're just not turning it over. We should stop hiding the locations of what we know to be the most dangerous natural gas pipelines, some of which run right underneath parks and schools. And if they were to explode, would cause massive, terrible death and destruction. And another thing we can do is we can get rid of the corporate income tax for monopolies. If you're a monopoly company, what happens now is you pay your electric bill to Southern California Edison or Con Ed in New York, and the tax money embedded in your bill often never gets to the government. It isn't just delayed for years. It, in many cases, never gets to the government. Huge amounts of time are spent by companies gaming the system to get that money and put it in their pocket permanently. Well, let's get rid of the corporate income tax for legal monopolies, and that problem goes away. Your rates will go down, and if we want the money to go to the government, we can add a tax onto the bill, and then we know the money actually goes to the government. Warren Buffett's been one of the biggest champions of trying to take tax dollars and stuff them into his own already deep pockets.
Well, David K. Johnson, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with David K. Johnson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. His most recent books, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, were New York Times bestsellers. He was a reporter for the New York Times for 13 years and teaches at Syracuse University College of Law and the Whitman School of Management, and was recently elected board president of Investigative Reporters and Editors Incorporated. His latest book just out is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind.
Companies are giving us a squeeze. Let's raise.